Hello and welcome to episode 29 of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. It's my real pleasure to chat with Jim McGeorge, who's University Secretary and Chief Operating Officer at the University of Dundee. In this episode, we discuss Jim's career, which took him from a PhD in fish parasitology to administrative roles at Abertay, Stirling and Dundee universities, as he moved from academic work to work on the dark side. He shares how he actually enjoyed the administrative aspects of academia rather than actual research, but does feel he's now in a position where he's not just empathising with the academic mindset, but is better placed in his role to support the creation of an environment for academic colleagues to thrive. Looking at how Dundee is seeing the way forward, Jim notes its great strengths in life sciences, where it has an international reputation, and it's also looking at the university's future size and shape. A new Vice-Chancellor started during the pandemic, and the entire recruitment and selection process was undertaken online, with lockdown necessitating a really creative induction process. In terms of the civic agenda for Jim and the new VC, Abertay and Dundee are both big employers in the city with lots of students and therefore real income generators. Jim observes that the relationship with the City Council is a really positive one and supportive, and comments that a big feature of the selling proposition of the city is the university. The opening of the V&A Museum helped too to put Dundee onto the map, and it is expected that the proposed Eden project development in the city will amplify this too. Naturally, we discuss the impact of COVID, and Jim stresses that the on-campus experience will remain vital for Dundee. In terms of working arrangements, the aim will be to combine the best of what was there before with the best of what has been learned over the past 18 months and ensure flexibility in the response. He also welcomes the recognition of the importance of many parts of professional services which emerged during the pandemic, and the greater respect for technicians, security, estate staff and many others without whom the university could not operate. We also explore the legislative differences between nations in the UK and the divergence in approaches to managing the pandemic in Scotland. Noting that north of the border, government ministers are much closer to universities, Jim nevertheless feels that the level of regulatory intervention is lower in Scotland than in England under the OFS. There are many more challenges ahead though, including funding and restating the value of universities, but the mood in Dundee remains positive. Jim's glass is very much three quarters full. I do hope you enjoy it. Welcome then to the latest edition of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. And this time it's my enormous pleasure to welcome Jim McGeorge, who is University Secretary and Chief Operating Officer at the University of Dundee. Welcome, Jim.
Thanks, Paul.
I can tell you're very excited to be participating. So we want to talk a bit about you and the university and a bit about university and higher education in Scotland. But as a kickoff, it would be really helpful, I think, to learn a bit about your career and how you ended up in your current elevated role. So where did it all begin?
So I'm a life scientist originally, Paul. So I had a degree in zoology at Liverpool and then a PhD in fish parasitology, would you believe, at the Institute of Aquaculture at Stirling University. So having done a three-year postdoc fellowship there in the days when, you know, a career as an academic involved lots of three-year uncertain money, I took a decision to look for something more permanent. And I crossed over to the dark side and went into kind of university administration. I started off as an executive officer, supporting the university secretary and vice chancellor at Abertay University in Dundee, which is the post 92 in the city. Spent about 9 years there in a range of different roles, finishing up as academic secretary and registrar. Then I headed off back to Stirling to become their director of strategic planning and governance. And then after nearly five years there, I came back to Dundee to take over from David Duncan, who's currently at Glasgow as COO.
So it's actually quite a small set of exchanges across the central belt of Scotland. And I mean, you know, all credit to you for managing that. You refer to going over to the dark side, and people do that, don't they? I mean, they do describe it. I mean, they still describe it as such, but it isn't that common a transition, is it, really?
No. I think it's something that relatively few people in our sort of role have done, actually. But I draw on that academic experience just about every day. I think knowing what makes academics tick and what they're interested in, what they're not interested in, how to go about achieving something through an academic route, I think is a really important part of what we have to do. So having a bit of an understanding of that, I found really helpful throughout my my career.
And I'm sure you're absolutely right. That kind of empathy with the academic enterprise is really important. So do you think you get the, how can I put this, you get the credit for your your PhD and your postdoc in terms of your academic colleagues within Dundee? Do they recognise you as someone who's merely chosen a different path but could be, you know, by now one of them, senior life scientist in the faculty?
I think so, though I suspect I wouldn't have been a particularly good academic, actually. I think as an academic, I was finding that the kind of administrative side of research, the running of it, the applying for grants, the writing reports and stuff was what I really enjoyed. Whereas the research itself was starting to get a bit samey after a while. I couldn't imagine doing that for the next 35, 40 years, actually. So it's a swap that I found helpful. I think it helps a little bit to have done a PhD and to have done that stuff. But given that that's 30 years ago now, I think I'm kind of so out of date that I don't think it gives me a huge amount of credit. And, I'm still just seen as the COO who does the difficult stuff and has to talk about money and budgets and those sort of things.
One of the kind of conceptions of roles in higher education that emerged over recent years was developed by Celia Whitchurch, this concept of the kind of third space professional, so kind of quasi academic, quasi administrative professional services type. And I think she contended that there would be this kind of group of third space professionals who would be, you know, both doing academic stuff and admin stuff. But I kind of feel that that I can see those kind of people, and they are in a niche, but there aren't a huge number of them. And I think when you were making the switch, and I suspect that there wasn't a conception of a third space professional who would do all that grant writing whilst at the same time doing a bit of research.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to do, actually. So I can see why that separation has been there and why it continues to be, I think, part of the scene. I don't think it's changed enormously in that period of time. And I think it's probably something just about the academic mindset that kind of focus on research and that commitment to undertaking your research and taking a discipline forward and creating new knowledge, I think is quite different from the mindset that's about the sort of stuff that we have to do in a more kind of operational, albeit still strategic role.
But I'm sure you're right. But part of what we're trying to do, and this goes back to the point of having that experience and knowledge and background that you do, is it's not just empathizing and understanding the academic mindset, it's actually being able to work in ways which are trying to create the environment in which those individuals can do their best work, and actually having the knowledge that you have it must help in that regard.
Yeah, I think it absolutely does. In the end, we're here to support the academic engine of the institution, be that in education or engagement or research. And actually, if we're not listening and aware of what academics need, we can't do that job well. And I think the best professional services kind of people recognise that they're out there getting feedback from the academic community about what they do, what's working well, what's working not. They're asking that question: how can we help you? How can we make it better? And we're also sharing why some things can't happen and why some things are difficult, and kind of setting the parameters within which that kind of academic enterprise has to work. And sustainability is one, but there are others as well around compliance or regulation that often our academic colleagues don't understand, and it's our job to communicate that. I think the key point also is that we have to also be demanding of our academic colleagues, particularly our academic leaders, around setting that vision, setting the policy direction, and then bringing the academic community along with them. So it's about that partnership And I think where vice principal or pro vice chancellor roles and director and COO type roles work really well is where that partnership is hand in hand. There's a mutual understanding and respect, and we really make things happen as a result.
I think that's a really sound point, Jim. So thinking about that in the context of your University of Dundee, then, I mean, how we've been through a very challenging time in the past, 16, 18 months. How is the university feeling about its course that it's charting ahead? I mean, where are you in the strategy process? How are you thinking about, navigating through this, still uncertain and difficult landscape? Where is the university at?
So at the moment, we have a new VC who started in January. So,
oh gosh,
and that coincides with our strategy coming to an end. Our latest iteration of a kind of 5-year strategy comes to an end next year. So we're right in the middle of developing a new strategy and doing that with a new VC at the helm. So some quite big questions being asked about our future direction, our future size and shape as an institution, and our discipline and subject mix as a result. I think the broad kind of parameters of our strategy about us being a kind of research intensive, medium-sized Scottish institution with quite a skewed research reputation in some respects. We've got absolutely world-class life sciences and medicine, and then some stuff in a kind of middle ground, and then some stuff which is good and really effective in an educational environment, some of which kind of came to us through merger over the last 20 years, but which isn't particularly research intensive. So that means we're perhaps a more diverse institution than many. And as a result, we're asking questions about what the right size and shape of our disciplinary mix should be into the future. And then there's a kind of question about our role as a civic institution. We're an important part of Dundee as a city, and how we really engage in that local economic development, addressing some of the kind of social issues in the city too. So how we become a real partner of the city council and others in improving the kind of lot of our region. Kind of themes that I suspect many institutions and their VCs and registrars are talking about at the moment. And COVID adds a sort of extra overlay to that.
Starting as a VC in the middle of a pandemic must have been quite challenging. How did it happen? I mean, how did the kind of induction work? Have they actually been to Dundee yet?
Yeah, so we, Ian Gillespie, who's our new VC, he'd been to Dundee a few times in the past, so we did know the institution a little bit, but we went through an entire interview and recruitment process without any of the candidates visiting the place. So it was all done online. The whole process was through Teams. So that was a very weird experience, certainly for us on one side of the table, but must have been especially so for him. Pitching for the big job, as it were, in that kind of environment. But it went really well. And then I think he's landed very well. I think we've been quite creative about how we've done some of that. And we have arranged some kind of COVID safe opportunities for him to come on campus and meet with people, often kind of shouting at a distance across a room with all the windows open. But, it's worked pretty well. And I think he's got the bit between his teeth, and the signs are really positive.
Oh, that's great. We'll come back to the working practices thing in a minute, because I do want to come back to that. But just on the civic issue, right, because obviously, you and Abate, you may be not huge institutions, but in the context of Dundee, actually, you must be really significant, both as employers and in terms of student populations as a proportion of the total population. So do you have big issues there in terms of, student behaviour, the high density neighbourhoods? Are there things around that are challenging?
I mean, in the main, I think the city is brilliant at welcoming students, and they see the value of the student community. So we're big in the context of Dundee. So there aren't many £260 million businesses in the heart of the city, and we are one. So, we have a big impact. Something like one in 12 jobs in the city are linked to the university. We've got a kind of 3-4 multiplier on that £250 million, which means we're worth £750 million to the regional economy. And the city council really welcomes us and bends over backwards, actually, to help us and accommodate us. There are the usual kind of student issues in the city occasionally, but we tend to manage those quite well. There are one or two hot spots where students obviously live within the city and can rub up sometimes with local communities. But in the main, I think that relationship works really, really well, and the city is very welcoming of our student population.
That's really encouraging to hear. And I mean, I think that, you know, universities like Dundee playing that both that joint international role and civic role. I mean, these things were often portrayed as if they were mutually exclusive, but actually they are integral. I mean, you're a university, you are, you know, the University of Dundee, right? That's where you are. That's your city, regardless of the international activities that you might have or the international draw that you might have, you know, and you can do both, I think. And I think that's really important to recognize as a, you know, a university like yours, and indeed, you know, like the one I'm in.
Yeah, we often talk of ourselves as the kind of Dundee's window on the world. So, you know, we're a very international organisation. We bring lots of international staff and students to the city, but we also kind of are a key feature of selling the city out to the wider world. So, Dundee in the past has had a reputation for being quite a parochial place and quite a distinctive kind of ring-fenced place, but actually the way that the city has reinvented itself over the last 10 years has been fantastic, and both universities have been at the heart of that. So bringing the V&A to the city has been an amazing development, and it's helped internationalize the city and get it on the map in a way that hasn't previously been the case. So we've seen ourselves in the list of kind of top 10 destinations to visit prior to coronavirus and this sort of thing, which is unprecedented for a city like ours.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the V&A is absolutely outstanding. But you can see the regeneration that is beginning to happen around it as well. Yeah. And that's got to be good for the universities and the city ultimately as well.
Yeah. And I think all of that will keep graduates around the city as well, which is something that's previously been an issue, is kind of graduating a lot of students who then move off to the central belt or down south or whatever, but actually keeping them in the city and contributing to its future development is really important. And of course the latest one is the Eden project, so there's going to be an Eden development in the city to regenerating a kind of former gasworks that's almost in the city centre, just to one side of the city centre, which again will be a fabulous kind of both tourist attraction but also opportunity to put the city on the map. And with a very strong environmental and kind of regeneration focus, which would be great.
That sounds fantastic. And presumably the universities are involved in that as well. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely core partners there.
Oh, fantastic. Going back then to the issue of, kind of the experience of work during the pandemic. I mean, we've all kind of feel like we've been through, you know, real trials and tribulations over the past 16 months. But what's your thinking, in your role about how working life is going to change at Dundee, you know, in professional services in particular, you know, learning from what you've learned over the past 16 months or so?
I think we will certainly be more flexible. There'll certainly be a kind of much more blended approach to kind of home working and on campus working. I think things will go back to much more as they were. I think the idea that there's a completely new model and the world's going to be completely different, I think is maybe over-egged at the moment. My sense is students are craving to be back on campus and to have a pretty normal learning experience and social experience. And that model, I think, is pretty resilient, actually. So the need to provide a really first-class student experience for people to be visible and available and able to support and help students from a professional services perspective is always going to be there. I think we won't lose that kind of benefit of technology, delivery of services through different means, delivery of learning through different means. And, you know, maybe the days of lots and lots of big class lectures have gone, but I still think that the on-campus experience will continue to be a strong one. And I do feel like we've lost a little bit of the kind of interaction between different directorates and different professional services colleagues that spin out new ideas and innovation through the kind of Teams process. You can try and do that, but you've almost got to force it. You don't get those kind of happenstance bumping into people kind of events that I think are really critical to making new stuff and new ideas happen. So, I would like to see us blend the best of what we had with the best of what we've learned from the last 12 months. But we've got every combination of staff desperate to get back on campus and staff desperate not to. And that doesn't always match with the staff that we want to be on campus and the staff who we feel could happily work off campus. So quite a challenge for us all, I think, to manage. But that can't be much different from, I suspect, what you're facing at Nottingham or other institutions are trying to wrestle with at the moment.
I think we're all having those discussions and trying to work out our pathways through it. Talking to colleagues in London, I think the situation is rather different there, simply because, there are lots of London universities have very, very expensive footprints, which they're trying to divest themselves of. Yeah. And then that then puts you in a position where, you have to have fewer people in, and you have to be more flexible. But, they tend not to be as campus focused as other universities are. And, for us, campus is absolutely central to the experience, And also, there's lots of your staff who, to do the research in the labs, they can't do that remotely,
And that means the people that are supporting them, they'd be their lab technicians or school administrators or whatever, have to be around too. Yeah. And that's not to say we can't be flexible. And, there's quite a lot of talk of 2 day and 3 day a week in and out models and things. But, that core requirement to deliver services on campus is really, really important. I think the other thing the pandemic has brought, Paul, is a real recognition of the importance of professional services and how key things like the estates team and the IT team are to the institution functioning. The areas that, are often sitting in the background and people don't appreciate or they think of as back of house actually are absolutely frontline delivery services. And I think the kind of respect for those teams and the jobs that they've done has been fantastic to see over the last 18 months or so. Asked a lot of those people, and often they're some of the less well paid people in our organisation, and they should be really proud of the kind of jobs that they've done across the piece for the sector.
I completely endorse that. I mean, it's been extraordinary. I mean, these many colleagues, like the ones you named, but also those in security and those working in the student accommodation, have been there throughout, right? Throughout the entirety of the pandemic, they've been here on campus supporting our students and other staff, and they've done an extraordinary job, and universities simply wouldn't function without that kind of commitment and contribution. It's been absolutely striking, you're right, and I do hope that we're able to to kind of recognize and reward that as well, as well as celebrate it, because I think it's hugely important. We talked a little bit earlier on about the issues of well, we faced differences within the United Kingdom. There's been greater divergence, both legislatively and indeed, arguably culturally, over the past few years than there's ever been, as well as politically as well. But it's always been different, higher education in Scotland anyway. There's always been this kind of sense of difference, both in terms of, the organisation of it and indeed, in curricular terms and all the rest of it, right? As well as the kind of governance of universities. So how does that feel now? Because, things have changed in England, as well as in Wales, Northern Ireland, and in Scotland over the past few years. So do you get a sense that you feel even more diverged than you were before? How do you see it from Dundee?
I think I do. I think there's clearly a kind of much more distinctive HE sector developing north of the border from south of the border. The funding arrangements are different. Free tuition in Scotland is a great public good, but students are funded below the full economic costs that we teach them for. And when you factor in then that all of our research costs is money, effectively the only way we balance the books up here is through international students. Now, I know you do that down south too, but with a much higher unit of resource for your core undergraduate population. So that funding piece is different. Scotland's a small place, so actually the government has a much more kind of direct hand and direct interest in institutions. And, in my 10, 12 years at Dundee, I've seen the First Minister call the the vice chancellor to ask about a policy decision or something that we're doing. Now, I don't know how often that happens down south, but I can't imagine it's particularly frequent. But it's that kind of level of kind of government interest and potentially desire to control as well that's quite distinctive up here. In terms of COVID, clearly, you know, again, a very distinctive approach north of the border, probably more cautious. And certainly early doors, a sense that Scotland was managing the kind of pandemic a bit better than down south, or certainly Nicola Sturgeon's ratings were higher than Boris's on that. And they still are. But, you know, because vaccination has been slightly slower up here and because we've had a kind of big third wave here, actually, you know, numbers are looking really bad north of the border compared to down south. And we've got some of the highest rates in Europe right now. And then, you know, early doors in the pandemic, we had quite a few big outbreaks in student accommodation, a major one in Glasgow, and we also had a smaller one in St Andrews. There was one in Dundee in a private sector hall. And, you know, that ongoing publicity around that has definitely sunk into the psyche of the minister north of the border, and they're desperate for that not to happen again. And again, that's making them quite cautious about the way that they approach opening up again and the start of next semester.
So the idea of, you know, the First Minister phoning up a Vice Chancellor to ask, I mean, just, it does seem extraordinary. But does that feel, does that manifest itself beyond that in terms of that, the kind of level of government intervention into what you might regard as kind of core university business? Because, you know, there were changes a few years ago in terms of university governance, the changes to courts and chairs of courts, etc., that kind of thing. Do you get a sense that more of that is on the way, or, you know, it's just about, in the sense, about COVID at the moment?
I think at the moment it's just about COVID. I think the governance changes have kind of bedded down, and we're living with them and managing with them. And I think most institutions managing well, and it's not all been bad, Paul. So, you know, some aspects of it I think have been quite positive. And I now look at what's happened with OFS down south, and actually for the first time probably in my 12 years at Dundee, I'm kind of quite glad I'm north of the border rather than south of it, because despite the fact they can be quite intrusive as a government and do sometimes get quite involved, actually the regulatory environment is not quite what it is through OFS. So I think you get swings and roundabouts in this sort of thing. And certainly at the moment, I think we're probably in a position of kind of looking south and saying, I'm glad we've not got that.
Thinking then of the beyond where we are now into the future, what in terms of the sector, and I mean, you know, the kind of UK sector rather than, you know, just Scotland or England or whatever, what do you think are the, you know, the kind of big challenges coming down the track towards us, you know, assuming we do get through the, you know, the rest of the pandemic? What do you think are the big challenges facing, you know, Dundee or the sector?
I think there's some real issues around the future of international student recruitment and the whole China piece and where that direction goes in the future, and whether we can still attract students in a post-COVID world. I'm sure we can if we get the experience right, but, you know, we're all probably over-invested in China, for example, and it'll be interesting to see where that goes in the next 5 to 10 years. I think international competitiveness and how the sector remains one of the finest in the world in the current funding environment. I feel that especially north of the border, where we're really struggling to balance the books on a year-to-year basis. But I think, you know, more broadly, as you see other countries investing more and more in their higher education systems, we may find ourselves getting eroded in terms of that leadership position, particularly on research, I think, where I think, again, how much the country is able to put into research in the future into the higher education sector as a whole, when we've got to pay the kind of price of all of the kind of COVID related costs is really interesting, actually. And then I think there'll be more questioning of government about the value of universities and what they get for their investment, and how we're rightly held to account for that. I think is an important part of the future landscape.
But the I mean, you talked to earlier about the kind of, you know, development of the next strategic plan. I mean, is the, and you've got a new vice chancellor, new vice chancellors are always optimistic in their outlook, aren't they? Almost always. So, but, you know, what's the mood in Dundee? I mean, is there a sense of kind of optimism and, you know, kind of, you know, direction and a kind of feeling that the future is there to be grabbed?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm a positive guy, right, Paul? So, you know, I'm always a three quarters full sort of person. So I think the future is a really strong one. And, you know, it's for us as a leadership team to set that future direction and make it happen. I think part of the challenge is I suspect we're going to have to get leaner as a sector and more efficient as a sector, and how we do that and keep our staff on board, keep morale up, how on occasion we reduce the size of our staffing complement, how we address things like the pension issue. It's really difficult because from a values perspective, you need to value your staff. You have to bring them along with us because in the end, they're the ones that deliver the learning, the teaching, that generate the new knowledge. But it's tough because you've got to do that in a wider environment that's not easy financially. So for me, you know, I think we can set a really exciting strategic agenda, and you know, I think we've got some world-class stuff at Dundee that will continue to be at that level, and I think we've got real opportunities to grow some other areas to hit the same kind of heights as our life sciences does. So yeah, relentlessly positive, I would say, Paul.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Jim, and may your glass remain forever three quarters full. So, Jim, it's been a joy talking to you. Thanks ever so much for your time. Do appreciate it, and we'll speak to you again soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Really enjoyed it.
That's all then from University Registrars talking about stuff this time. There'll be plenty more along in due course. And if you can't wait, then please do check out the Registrarism blog on wonky.com, where you'll find lots of higher education comment and fun and games. Until next time.